Addiction to Inflation and Federalism by Tom Wilson. Can you break an addiction that is taking away your individual liberty? Do you have the courage to admit that you have become addicted to a way of life that is killing our nation? This message is oriented to the subject of our having become addicted to a false economy, an artificial economic order that is destined to collapse. How we got into this present predicament will be revealed, and then what we have to do to get ourselves out of it. Just what is it we're looking at in this thing we call our inflated national economy? There are a number of conditions that will produce a high-level economy. How about a wartime economy? Can we sacrifice the human life, human emotions, and waste the materials from our resources to afford such an economy? Well, of course not. That's unthinkable. But as we zoom in close to the analysis of economy, we find that anything that forces unnatural inflation of economy will require these same sacrifices, although they may not be seen so easily from the surface. The sacrifices will be made sooner or later. There is no such thing as something for nothing, unless you can count promises as something. It's all over the news these days how our federal government is doing many things to boost up, shim up, jack up, shore up, and regulate our economy, stabilize it, they say. Only today, another remedy was announced. The national debt limit was raised by another $47 billion. And these same fixers are the ones who pay agriculturalists for not growing things, but will fine and imprison them if they do. Throughout all segments of our national economy, it has become painfully clear that only a very fine line is left between where we are now and totalitarian control, or to express it in plain language, a dictatorship. Our addiction to an economy falsified by promises has led us into trading in all that we have for nothing. All of our constitutional liberties for slavery. Do you think this is not true? Then look around very cautiously, slowly, and thoughtfully. But don't try to run. You're in a well-concealed trap. A trap that we paid for and built with our own hands. We didn't recognize it because we were told the pieces were for building a more secure way of life. Future benefits, and all that sort of thing. Remember? We have been promised all sorts of controls and regulations that would help us to have a more sound and prosperous competitive free enterprise system, a system that built us into the world's greatest industrial nation. Why, all of a sudden, did our wonderful system that worked so well need so much fixing? Because somebody wants to take it away from us. That's why. And they have all but done it. So this is a thumbnail summary of our national economic outlook, the shape it's in now, and how it got that way. The research that went into preparation of this message and the previous message titled Common Sense and Your Last Chance to Use It has uncovered something very significant. There is some kind of disorder in almost every facet of the national scene these days. This is no surprise because many of these disorders receive national publicity. Such things as energy shortages, school busing, high taxes, red tape, bureaucracy, and so forth. Now, you are quite familiar with the many areas of unrest and controversy. But the shocking discovery came when it was found that without exception, all of these problems trace back to only one principal source, a conspiracy to take over our nation. There seems to be no way to prepare any message dealing with national problems that can be isolated from this underlying common source of our many problems. You may be sick and tired of hearing about our national economy because far too much is being said about it these days by people who don't seem to know much about economy. They have so much disagreement about the cause and remedy. But here we're going to deal with the side of our national economy that the experts don't seem to understand. This is your side of the economy, where the real philosophy of sound economy begins. The experts tend to forget that the big economy consists of the sum of millions of smaller pieces. That's us. We're not just a mass of peasants or slave workers. That is, not quite yet. We are individuals that use the power of our minds and the toil of our hands to produce the products in our economy, and we have the purchasing power that makes our wares and money circulate. When the experts start thinking only in terms of billions and forget where the many pieces that make their billions come from, we're in a lot of trouble through no fault of our own. Experts on affairs of national economy are employed as advisors in our federal governing system, and these advisors, with the power of federal regulation and federal control to back them up, have succeeded over a period of years in generating a national economic structure that is inflated, unsound, unstable, unbalanced, and unnatural. This has been done a little at a time to keep us unaware of their plot. We have become slaves to federal regulation and at the same time have become hooked on, addicted to, the loose money, high times, circus atmosphere of an inflated economy. The younger generation, now of voting age and perhaps a little older, has grown up in a false economy and they do not realize that they are addicts. Many of us who are from a little farther back know that our economy is a fake, but have become addicted to the various benefits either handed out or promised for some day later, and fear to raise a finger in protest for fear of losing our federal fix. This leads to the source of our problem. We are the victims of a deliberate plan, conspiracy if you prefer, to collapse our economy and force our submission to a new order of government under a so-called new constitution, a totalitarian dictatorship police state governing system that takes away our remaining freedom and makes us slaves. It will not be possible to properly cover the subject of our national economy without showing the workings of our economy as related to the plot to overthrow our government. So let's explore the causes and cure of this relation first, then go into economic structure. It is after defeat that we rise up to become strong, and it is after victory that we begin another fall. Only after we have had something and then lost it are we able to assess a true value to what we had. Thus, by our own experiences and through the experiences of others, we learn to become more conscious of the value of what we possess instead of taking all things for granted. The most precious possession of we the people in our free nation is our freedom of choice within the laws of the land, our freedom of choice guaranteed by the Constitution drawn up by our founding fathers. We have already lost much of this guaranteed freedom of choice, and this loss has not been through any fault in our original constitutional structure. Our freedom is being taken away, a little at a time, by unconstitutional federal laws and unconstitutional federal controls and policies. This has been accomplished through subversive, behind-the-scenes manipulation of our federal system, manipulation which bypasses our representative rights in government. It takes an awful lot of gall and an awful lot of evil subversion to contaminate our federal structure with unconstitutional deviations like those which have brought on our present loss of popular representation. This has been accomplished in a variety of ways, but the manipulations have been made possible through public indoctrination to an illusion that federal control and federal power hold all the answers to all our problems. Manipulated control of our mass communications media has made this indoctrination possible and very effective. Just listen to the national newscast for a few times and you will begin to realize that what you are hearing most is indoctrination, that federal control, federal power, federal policy, and federal wealth hold all the answers to all our problems, domestic and international. All of the subversive manipulation to overthrow our system ties in directly with our national economic structure. Most of the influence that results in constitutional deviation comes about through pressure upon and within our federal system, pressure by highly centralized big money and corporate interests, backed with the manpower and the money to make their interests heard and favored over and above our popular public opinion. This overriding of public opinion is not possible without deviating away from our original constitutional system. manipulation of unconstitutional legislation into federal law has been taking away the voice of the people in our representative system and giving power of decision directly to federal authority. Much of this shift in power to federal authority has been manipulated into federal law under the guise of need for stronger federal power that bypasses acts of Congress during emergencies. This might seem to be logical, except that now the federal government has the legal authority to declare some kind of a national emergency at any time and take over all power of control, whether a real emergency exists or not. The lust for power that is behind federal manipulation is the same lust for power that has gained control of our national economy, because the power is in the hands of the same people. By disregarding long-standing antitrust laws, the major producers of materials and energy for our nation have become highly centralized in both operations and in management. Our popular preferences are receiving less and less recognition, whether we are looking toward the federal government or looking for food of our preference in the supermarket. Over-centralization in both government and industry has placed our freedom of choice within the limits of what those in control give us to choose from, and even this limited choice is influenced by the pressure of national advertising. We don't have anywhere near the range of choice that we should have in a national economy the size of ours, whether we are looking at automobiles, foodstuffs, clothing, appliances, or who's running for office. This is a very unhealthy economic catastrophe because it reflects the collapsing of independent business, competitive free enterprise, and the natural economic system of supply and demand. So we have all but lost local independence of government and local independence in production of supplies necessary for survival and for defense. From our side, the we the people side of our national scene, this predicament is precarious. It makes us quite vulnerable to internal collapse, internal overthrow, or external overthrow of our nation. This is indeed a sad day in the history of our beloved United States of America. We are, generally speaking, a nation of nice people, all but a few bums, and thank goodness we still have the right to choose either way of life within the law of the land. But we are also, generally speaking, a nation of trusting souls that have been sold on the auction block of federalism by the very people who have made the loudest proclamations about representing our best interests. No, we can't blame our founding fathers or their constitutional representative system. We grew into the world's greatest nation under their system by respecting and not deviating away from it. Let's put the blame exactly where it belongs, on the power-crazed manipulators who have infiltrated our governing system and our national economy. Our personal guilt lies only in being too trusting to the extent of being suckers to their evil schemes. So what is our outlook in this great big inflated economy with a deviated federal government? Do we survive? Can our children look forward to a life of prosperity and contentment, or a life of slavery? Will there be a United States of America, or will we become a slave unit under a totalitarian one-world government? Will our efforts to achieve a lasting civilization degenerate into a return to the Dark Ages? The right answers to these questions can't be manipulated, subsidized, legislated, or regulated by federal controls. The answers we must have can come only from the hearts of we the people, not just words, but spirit and action, mass action, public opinion backed by the real power that makes our nation go, we the people. We survive only through knowledge of truth and the application of this knowledge in our living. Deviation from the truth into ways not compatible with the laws of nature means an early termination of our efforts to survive. Knowledge in the mind, like knowledge in a book, has no value whatsoever unless it is put to work. But the mere transfer of knowledge from one individual to another is knowledge at work, and it will, if circulated, reach a recipient that will turn it into dynamic action. Here a word of caution. It is important that the knowledge of truth be the truth as you feel it, Not all knowledge is truthful, and we have fallen victim to much indoctrination that is presented as the whole truth when it is neither truthful or accurate, but instead it contains only bits and pieces of the truth to give us the illusion that it is the whole truth. You have a good mind, a logical mind, and possess the power to make important decisions that mean life or death. This is not an occasional decision, but one you face perhaps many times each day. If you drive a car or just walk across the street, you make such decisions. Your desire to survive is well supported by your ability to survive through use of your natural and cultivated senses of logic and judgment. So if you will open your mind to face the facts you already know and open your eyes to really see what you have been looking at every day, your common sense may scare you half to death, and well it should. You will soon realize that our problem is one that is much too big to be solved by expert economists or by a federal government. The only real power of a nation is in its people, and the real power in an economy is in its people. The only power of a government lies in the willingness of the people to back it up with their power, the power in their minds and their hands that make it go, either in ways that are good or in ways that are bad. So the real power is ours, and that means yours too. Knowledge of the truth carries with it an obligation to share it wherever it is welcome. We have been misled, have fallen victim to the oldest form of deception known to the human species, the promise of something for nothing. There is no such thing, and we all know it, but have a weakness for its temptation. Those who would take away all that we have, then lead us into their servitude, always do it with promises. We already know, if we listen to our own judgment, that anything our leaders can give us must first be taken away from us. We let them manipulate legislation to make our contributions compulsory. Next, they start throwing and giving our contributions away, and there's not much left to give back to us except more promises. Oh, they keep giving us something, all right. They go borrow. Then we owe that back to them, plus interest. Economic experts call this high-sounding terms like national debt and deficit spending. You might call it grand larceny, embezzlement, or a protection racket that takes and takes but doesn't give anything back. So you see, the federal government can't solve our problem. Promises haven't done it, and promises can't do it. Whether we like it or not, the decisions that determine our future and the future of our children are down to our level, right where our founding fathers said it should always be 200 years ago. There is no earthly power greater than that of public opinion. This is the power that makes leaders of nations follow the will of the people instead of the people following the will of a dictator. The choice is ours, as individuals and as a populace. Individuals can do only so much working alone, but individuals form our populace, and the populace can do it. People power grows as individuals wake up and get up off of those idle promises, start making similar sounds and pointing in a common direction. Then come the individuals who want the glory of leadership and climb onto the bandwagon of public opinion. This starts the cycle that inevitably leads to corruption all over again. But it may be a long cycle with several generations of prosperous, contented living. And who knows, maybe we will actually discover real civilization and prosper in peace and contentment forever. No, we can't allow ourselves the luxury of losing ourselves in probabilities, not until the job at hand is completed to our popular satisfaction. There is more to be done than we have ever had to do before. But there are more of us to do it than ever before. Thanks to a handful of very aware patriots, the job of repairing our bruised and battered nation and its economy has already begun. Success or failure is in our hands, we the people. Now must come the rise of united opinion, united concern, united effort, and united spirit. We are all in this together. Our efforts and opinions must not become dissected into social and economic categories, ethnic groups, or minorities. This time we're all standing at the crossroads, And the only issue is, do we survive or don't we survive? We all choose together, or we all lose together. Now let's establish a few well-recognized facts relative to our economy. We do have an inflated economy, with prices and taxes to match. We do have federal regulations that affect the level of our economy through subsidies and price fixing. We have no choice other than to base our workable sense of values, whether we like it or not, on the level of our inflated, federally influenced, or federally manipulated economy. Therefore, our economy, our way of life, and our personal sense of values are all closely related to federal economic policies and the multiplicity of federal controls. It is also well established that our present economy is very unstable, and that while high-level inflation means prosperity for some of us, it is unbalanced and works a hardship on the rest of us. Next, let's examine, one at a time, 12 different ingredients that must surely be included in any free nation's economic society if the economy is to be stable and survive. Economy ingredient number one, a realistic public and individual sense of values for material things. This sounds so simple, and yet it is quite important and even complex. Normally, in a self-balancing supply and demand economy, our personal sense of values regulates the economic level because the level has to assume a position somewhere near our average evaluation of things. So in a natural economy, it is the people who establish the level. We are surrounded by such quantity and variety of man-made things in our daily lives that we are inclined to take their existence for granted without realizing their actual value to us and the part they play in our economy. So often we take a real good look at something just twice during the period of our ownership. The first time is when we take possession of it, and the second time is just before we throw it away. If it's an expendable type item, we don't bother to take the second look, but we should, to see if there isn't some further usage that can be served through some reclamation process. Somehow this brings up a news item that originated somewhere way down in Texas. It was to the effect that one of the prisoners in a jail cell would occasionally unscrew the light bulb in his cell, break the bulb, and eat the glass. One day after such an episode, the jailer went into the cell, picked up the broken bulb metal screw base from the floor, held it up to the prisoner, and said, "Why, looky here, you've done throwed away the best part." But be that as it may, you might find it enlightening to look around at some item you normally take for granted. Look at it as if seeing it for the first time. Determine what it really is good for, if anything. Where did the materials originate? How is it made? Who made it? And what part did or does it play in our economy? This may sound like a silly sort of thing to do, but it will, in a very small way, broaden the understanding of what an economy really is. All that we see has some kind of value relative to our economy, whether it is a diamond watch or a bag of garbage. Let's take, for example, an ordinary can of beans. The beans are valuable if you're hungry. If you're starving, you would fight for a can of beans. The beans grow by processes known only to nature, but which are assisted by people. They are harvested, cooked, canned, labeled, transported, and merchandised by people with the assistance of machines built by people. The can originates with iron ore, which is smelted, refined, and rolled into sheet steel in a steel mill, built and operated by people. The steel is then tin-plated and formed into cans by people and the machines in a can factory. Then the can is filled, sealed, labeled, and boxed in a food cannery. The label and box originated in a forest and came through a paper mill, and then printers put on a description of the contents. So a lot of people and equipment are involved in a can of beans. Commercial artists, tool makers, glue factories, trucks and drivers, and the list goes on and on. So we eat the beans and throw away the can and the label. Why? Because we're wasteful. That's why. The can is recyclable, and so is the label if removed. It can be made into paper again, or it can be burned as a fuel. Well, so much for a can of beans. You might, however, find it interesting, educational, and rewarding to ponder the value of things. The price stamp on an item doesn't really describe very well the role an item has played on its trip down through our economy on its way to the consumer. Our city dumps and disposal landfills are turning into mountains of material that should have found further usage. Overpackaging contributes to waste that will eventually come to an end. But it would be much better, in fact, it is absolutely essential, that we find the right answers to our waste problems. If we wait for nature to put an end to our wasteful ways, it will, but it will be of no help to us at all by then. When economy is perverted through monopolistic control or through federal regulatory controls, it loses natural balance and begins to swing up and down as the controls are manipulated. Those doing the controlling make multiple fortunes this way, at public expense. Their gain somehow always turns out to be our loss in one way or another. A forced economy that is not self-regulating is a poor risk for long survival. Economy ingredient number two, a realistic public and individual sense of values for labor and time. It is our labor and our time through the use of our minds and hands that supply the actual motive force of our economy and make it work. Here again, we are faced with values that should be self-regulating in a self-balancing economy. The value of labor and time must be based on the ability and functional productivity of individuals, not on an average value like applies to materials. Wage contracts and federal wage fixing represent monopolistic setting of values that warp the economic balance and let some thrive while others perish. Forced control limits incentive and alters individual productivity. We will always have our responsibility to the old, the ill, the indigent, and the incapable. Let's always take care of them generously through local and state aid, not through federal agencies where administrative costs are unaccountable. Let's put the money where the need is, all of it. In our constitutional democratic republic, we are free within the laws of the land to spend our labor and time working toward fulfillment of personal hopes and dreams. Slaves work only to meet the demands of dictators. Slavery is the highest order of fixing a value on labor and time.